handcuff.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone involved with the entertainment world. Now, normally, I sit down one-on-one with a musician or an author. Today, I'm going to do something slightly different. My special guest is Don Cleese. Don is neither an author nor a musician, or at least not as far as I know. He is the Vice President of Programming for Acorn Media. Acorn is an interesting company. They specialize in importing classic and contemporary British TV shows to the US in a DVD format. Don, welcome to the show, and thanks for taking time out to talk to us.
Thank you very much, Simon. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about something which is not only my livelihood, but something which I very much enjoy.
So do I. Maybe we can start with a little history. Tell us a little bit about Acorn. How long has it been around, and why the focus on the Brit shows?
Okay, well, I'll try to keep that fairly brief. The company actually started out under the name Atlas Video, doing a lot of documentaries with a historical flavor. We're based in the Washington, D.C. area, and there's a lot of historical sites of interest to many, and that was something where we got started doing. Over time, we started thinking, well, gee, people have already made interesting programs. Maybe we should explore, you know, licensing them, just picking the best ones out there and bringing them out to the market, you know, using that part of our expertise more so than any production side of things. And that kind of gradually led to us, led to the British programming thing. The CAD file series with Derek Jacobi was probably the turning point for us as far as the show that really made us think, wow, this is a really good line for us, and I guess you could say we've been going that way ever since.
Most U.S. viewers know very little about British TV other than the occasional series featured on PBS. How do you get your message out that these great shows exist?
Excellent question, and I think you can say it's a challenge no matter how you slice it. Our very excellent publicist, Chad, who helped set this whole thing up, does a great job in getting us press attention. Fortunately, there's still a fair number of like-minded people as far as the quality of these programs who like to write about them at kind of all levels of the press world. But I think one thing that's been great for us is, I have to say, the Internet and Amazon certainly is a retailer that has, by kind of taking shelf space out of the question or out of the equation a little bit, has definitely helped us really get the word out, because someone hears about a show, they stumble across it, or they, you know, a friend tells them about it, and they can just search it and hopefully find it, and hopefully find it, you know, as released by us. There's still a couple other distributors out there, but you know, we still think we're best.
Oh, other distributors? Oh, I wouldn't give them room on my shelf.
Oh. Well, now I have friends who with some of these companies, so I have to, you know, I bite my tongue a little bit. But no, there's you know, I think it's really a testament to the interest that people have in the show that there are other companies out there doing the same kinds of material. I mean, certainly the BBC obviously does some great stuff, and you know, we plow a slightly different furrow than they do on a lot of titles. But I think that having a lot of great titles out in the market is a good thing. Again, we definitely do our part, and I think we're happy about it.
How do you determine which shows to carry?
A great question. Question I tend to get asked a lot at company functions, and I'm still figuring the answer out. It's kind of a balance of art and science a little bit. I mean, there's always, as much as I love a show, there's always a financial part of the equation. I have to have a confidence that there's enough people out there who will either be familiar with the show from some past broadcast or if they find out about the show through, whether it's through Acorn's own catalog that we send out to, you know, literally millions of people each year, whether it's where they see it on Amazon or whatever. We have to believe there's enough people who would buy it to make it worthwhile. But then also there is just that gut feeling. Sometimes, you know, some titles are very easy. A program like Foyle's War, which is a great series, which has been airing on PBS for the last several years. That's an easy pick. Of course, that's a great show. Easy one to pick. Other things that haven't had the broadcast, it does fall back a little more on intuition and just sort of the criteria we've identified as far as quality and kind of collectability.
One challenge that I see, being from England, you might have spotted that by my accent.
I thought as much.
Right. Though I've not lived there for almost 30 years, there's a huge cultural difference. Yes, we speak the same language, but the cultures are actually quite different, not least of all in the humor department. The dry Brit wit is often missed by US viewers. Those few humor shows that have succeeded in America have tended to be of the slapstick nature. Mr. Bean and Rising Damp spring to mind. How do you market British humor?
That's a great question, and of course, you know, British humor is on the one hand, it's sort of a great it's a great thought, you know, it's a great area because, you know, you look at things like Absolutely Fabulous and The Office and so forth. Of course, Monty Python, sort of the wellspring of this, and those are shows that have done great. You know, at the other end, there are a lot of shows that are, have not done as well. You know, humor is such a tricky area because, nothing is universally funny, and that's so we tend to be very very picky in what we release on the comedy front. Not that we're not picky on everything, but I think comedy we really have to have a great feeling about it. I agree that definitely. I think that some of the, you know, I think you make a great point about Mr. Bean. You know, Mr. Bean is, so far as I can tell, a lot more popular than, say, Blackadder with the same star, Rowan Atkinson. But Blackadder is clearly a much more verbal, you know, I think literate show, you might call it. I know, you know, my own sense of humor probably goes more towards the verbal comedy. Which is why I suppose I'm really happy that one of our best-selling comedies is a program called A Fine Romance, which stars Judi Dench. This is something she did several years before As Time Goes By. Frankly, I prefer it to As Time Goes By, not just because Acorn releases A Fine Romance and someone else does As Time Goes By. I just happen to think it's a very, just again, witty. You know, you hate to, that word can be a little bit of a cliche, but it's a really witty title, and obviously stars help. You know, that's one thing. You know, Judi Dench as the
right
lead, that's a great asset for any production, especially a comedy. I think there is a certain tend towards slapstick in American comedy, and so I guess you could say that when we see something like A Fine Romance, which is so well written, that be successful, it's very heartening for us.
I must admit that a fine romance is not one that I've had the opportunity to look at, and I'll add the word yet.
okay. Yeah. Well, that's we'll have to help you with that, Simon. The the quick version of it is Judi Dench stars in it with her real life husband, the late Michael Williams, and they're just this great, wonderfully mismatched pair. Neither one of them is I think anyone's sort of ideal mate. It's one of those things. They're not perfect, but they're perfect for each other. And I think that it's a very a lot of romantic comedies I think can tend to ring very false. I think the chemistry between these two, who are obviously very close in real life, I'm sure that helped. But it's a very genuine chemistry, and again, it rings true in a vein where so many other shows ring false. And again, it's one of those things. I'm just eminently proud is in our lineup.
Looking through your catalog, and to me, your catalog is this lovely treasure. And for listeners, all you have to do is go to www.acorn.com and click on, I believe it's the index link. Anyway, one title in the humor category that caught my eye was Porterhouse Blues. I had the opportunity to review it prior to release. Now, in my mind, that show represents all that is great in British humor. What sort of feedback did you get from people that bought it?
I definitely don't always get direct feedback from viewers, but I do. I'd be lying if I said I didn't check the reviews on Amazon, and this is one of the reviews been pretty positive. I think you hit on the humor, and I think it is very British. It is that kind of dry wit that that is the British are known for. And I think what's interesting about it though is that that the actors, that the main actors in this show, are not people who are terribly well known as comedy actors. David Jason, who a lot of people would know from probably like A Touch of Frost. He's not particularly known as a comedy actor. I guess maybe a little bit from Only Fools and Horses, but then Ian Richardson, who again sadly passed away not too long ago. His kind of best known role was as in the House of Cards trilogy. He's playing the kind of odious politician, or Acorn's own Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. These are not comic actors, but I think I think it's almost works better because of that. I think they're just actors, and they don't have to overplay the humor. There's nobody mugging for the camera or any of those other things that that ring false. These are serious actors, and there's a lot of they balance the humor, and they find the humor in I think a fairly sometimes some very serious moments, and I think it's great. It's one of those shows that I think I love them all to some greater or lesser extent, but definitely special fondness for Porterhouse Blue. So thank you for mentioning it, because it's one of those that maybe was under people's radar a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely understated. It's a show that everyone should get to see. Okay, enough of old Acorn history. Let's move on to the here and now.
Okay.
You've just released Children of the Stone, an absolutely classic sci-fi series. The quality of production and using Avebury as the backdrop makes this a cinema rather than a TV experience. What can you tell us about this release?
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, this one, where I first saw it, I think where a lot of Americans would have first seen it, was, hard to believe, but on the cable network Nickelodeon back in the early 80s when they actually they imported a fair amount of British programming, and this show was shown as part of an anthology series called The Third Eye, which kind of dealt with things in this almost sort of paranormal vein. And you know, and I always, again, I think I was you know, I just remember it being just kind of delightfully spooky. And you know, the British have, you know, I think, always understood the importance of atmosphere in their TV productions. You know, certainly the atmosphere that words can create, the scripting is you know, almost always of a high standard. But I think also that you hit on it, they found this great location, and you really, it just puts you on the spot and it creates this atmosphere that, you know, it's a very memorable piece of television. I think, you know, British sci-fi has, you know, historically never had the same kind of production values of American shows in the genre, but again, where the Brits have always excelled has been in the quality of the writing, and I think there's a little more creativity in how they bring the shows to light. You know, as much as you know, sometimes the sets may not always be as great as you'd like them to be, but you know, the imagination makes allowances. Thankfully, they had a great real life location here on Children of the Stone, so you know, that again, it just adds to it, and it really is just a great example of a very, again, literate, thoughtful approach to science fiction, you know, as opposed to, you know, it's not about aliens and monsters and ray guns. It's really about, you know, it's about kind of the otherworldly in the here and now. And I think people just love that, you know.
What grabbed me about it was the sheer quality of the writing and the production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you realize that this is something that is not from the here and now, it was actually first aired, what, 30 years ago?
Roughly, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, awesome material.
And you know, it's funny though, you know, one thing I kind of feel obliged to mention here is that, you know, this was done for a commercial network in the UK. I mean, I think, you know, I think there sometimes people just assume, oh, well, if it was done for a commercial network, it can't possibly be good, and people assume that all British TV sometimes is from the BBC, and that's, you know, that's not the case. I mean, some of the frankly, the best shows ever done, you know, are, you know, these were done, you know, with the intent of grabbing an audience, and I think it's very heartening to know that the people, you know, to think that you know, again, American TV very often goes for the lowest common denominator, but it's always nice to think of people approaching television with the thought of, you know, yes, we want people to watch, we want people to be entertained, but we can do it in a way that will really be engaging and really make them wonder about stuff and just be, you know, just intelligent about it. So I think that the British have always, again, they've really prized the writer in a way that you don't always see in other, you know, other countries' television. So yeah, some of this stuff stands up just remarkably well, and that's the key to Acorn's business, that these things do, I think, they feel as they're as good, they seem as good now as they did 30 years ago when they were first broadcast. So.
Oh, absolutely. Cop shows have long been standard primetime fare on American cable stations. The shows are too numerous to even contemplate, but they tend to share some common threads. You know, they're flashy, fast cars, gobs of technology. You know, CSI sums it up in three letters. The Brit cop shows tend to shun the props and go for depth of character and clever dialogue. The Last Detective is a prime example. I enjoyed that series so much. You've just released it as a box set. What's your thoughts on The Last Detective?
Well, you know, it's funny because in a way this is an example, you know, just kind of almost want to hark back to your to one of your earlier questions about how do we determine what we're going to carry. And, you know, The Last Detective has not been broadcast in the U.S., but I remember coming across the show and thinking, you know, mysteries have been a mainstay of our lineup. And really, just after watching it, I just kind of, you know, after watching and seeing just how good Peter Davison was, you know, in the role. I mean, a lot of people in the U.S. probably know him best from either All Creatures Great and Small or, you know, or Doctor Who. They, just watching him in this role and just seeing what a fundamentally decent guy he was and this person who is, you know, a little bit kind of, he's underestimated by everyone and, you know, and just the fundamental decency of the man that comes through. And again, that was something I just thought, you know what, maybe this won't be our biggest bestseller ever, but I just knew, as sure as I knew anything, that there was a big enough audience out there of people who, you know, who liked Peter Davison, who liked the mystery genre, some combination of those things, that would respond to a show like this, you know, because, you know, and again, it's a case of, it was, again, one of the things I love about what I do is being able to find a great show like this that hasn't had the exposure in the U.S. and help, you know, help it find an audience and you know, and just get it out to people, you know, because I think, unfortunately, there are fewer and fewer outlets for British TV, and I think in that, you know, there's a lot more people who love British TV than I think there are in, I think that's out of proportion to the number of outlets showing it. So I think, I won't say Acorn is performing a public service. No, I will say Acorn is performing a public service. You know, we're helping, you know, really people find some really great, great, you know, shows. And, you know, I just am really, really fond of that show. And I'm really pleased at how much people have, enjoyed it and you know, and really kind of taking it to heart.
What I really, really enjoyed about the box set was the fact that you included the original 1981 movie, which I believe starred Bernard Cribbins.
Yes.
Yeah. A name that many. Many U.S. viewers or listeners may not be familiar with. He was a great actor and a very funny character, and it was interesting to look at that original movie and to see how they had adopted the character to someone more contemporary. I believe The Last Detective, the TV version, aired between, was it 2003 and 2007?
Roughly, yeah. I can't remember when the last episode aired. It was either 2007 or 2008. You know, they did four series all together. Sadly, it looks like there's not likely to be another one, which is... you know, which is a shame. I think that there were probably more stories to be told. But you know, but then again, any British show that, you know, for a British show, you know, getting to the third or fourth series is relatively rare. And so you know, it really is a sign of success. And Yeah, you know, it's interesting that the movie with Bernard Cribbins. He's mostly known as a comic actor, and you know, it's and I will say the 1981 movie version, which is pretty much plot wise, pretty much you know along the lines of the pilot episode of the Peter Davison series. It's definitely played a little bit more humorously, and I don't think you get it. You don't get quite as much into the character of Dangerous Davis as you get in the ongoing series. But it's an interesting point of comparison, and I think it shows. I think it was a good idea then, and if anything, it's just a good approach that they've improved on with the current series.
A couple of days ago, I had the sheer delight of watching Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares.
Oh yeah.
Food is big business in the TV world these days, and Gordon Ramsay is certainly a character. I know Hell's Kitchen appeared on U.S. TV, but has Nightmares been shown over here?
What we're releasing is the UK edition of Kitchen Nightmares. He has done some episodes with that are set in the US. We're doing the UK version, and I believe BBC America has been running the UK version. But suffice it to say, I think if you've seen Gordon Ramsay on TV, you kind of know what you're expecting, and I think that. Maybe if there's a distinguishing trait of Acorn's line, it really is that is memorable characters, and it could be an unassuming man like Peter Davison's Dangerous Davis, or Jeremy Irons in Brideshead Revisited as Charles Ryder, or it can be a real life personality like a Gordon Ramsay who the thing about Gordon Ramsay is he's obviously a bit he's more than a little blunt. But what's interesting is, and I think what sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, is how passionately he cares about good cooking and good food. You know, that he's not raking anyone over the coals for the sake of it. He wants these people to succeed because food is really, that's his mission. And I think that passion comes through, and I think that passion makes for some very compelling viewing. For those who watch it,
we're rapidly running out of time here, but I want to move on to very quickly run on to some upcoming features out of Acorn. The Biodeck affair looks intriguing. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's a show from the 80s, and it's a bit of a mystery title, but with this very nice undercurrent of a romance between these two teachers, one of whom is an absolute jazz fanatic, and suffice it to say, his passion for old jazz recordings leads him into some areas of intrigue that certainly he never would have imagined. And this is the first of a trilogy of stories. It's followed by the Biederbeck Tapes, which is coming out later this year, and then the Biederbeck Connection, which is on tap for 2010. And again, just a really just witty, almost throwback to the kind of classic romantic comedies that Hollywood used to do so well in the 30s and 40s and doesn't do so well nowadays. If you find that today's actors are lacking on-screen chemistry in the movies, something like the Biederbeck Affair, I think, is a great antidote to that, to that absence. So, great show. I think it's a lot of fun.
Alas, this 30 minutes has flown by far too quickly. I should have scheduled this for an hour. Don,
I could talk that long.
I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with us today, and I want to wish you and Acorn Media the very best success in your quest to bring British TV to America. Where can people find out more information about your products, and more importantly, where can they order stuff?
Well, if they go to www.acornmedia.com, that will provide them a link not only to get more information about the titles, but also they can link through to our online shop, acornonline.com. So that acornmedia.com is the best place to start, I think. I think they'll find we've got some great stuff coming up and some great stuff that we've released if British TV is their thing.
I do hope that we can repeat this program in a couple of months. We'll talk about the new stuff.
Oh, fantastic. I'd be happy to.
Okay. Don, thank you so much. Have a great day. This is Simon Barrett saying goodbye from Blogger News Network on the radio.
We're not-